Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations.
Yes.
It is nearly St. Paddy's Day.
So close.
And we are appropriately St. Paddy-fied because we tend to be, you know, on the cursy side of things. So,
yes.
Word to the wise, if you're not down with foul language.
Fuck off.
In short, if you don't like alcoholic references, you might not be in the right place. If you are like more of a starched collar Catholic or Christian than a loosey-goosey, then you may need to look elsewhere for direction and advice.
We don't mean to offend you.
So, Church Drunk, we are a bit potty mouth. And in addition to that, we don't just talk about foul mouth things. We talk about like sacraments and transubstantiation and all that shit because we're Catholic and angels, but some of us are less inclined than others. But we're Catholic. You don't have to be. So if you are still with us,
welcome
to Church Drunk, our St. Paddy's Day Drunk Lives of the Saints annual. We can call
new
it now
tradition.
An annual episode.
Yes.
I am Guest, here with my co-host Diz.
Hey.
Diz, happy almost St. Paddy's Day.
Thank you.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking a lovely glass of California Rosé because it was Laetare Sunday last time, and one of our sacred texts here on Church Drunk, Drinking with the Saints, The Sinner's Guide to a Holy Happy Hour. You should check it out. It's great.
Yep.
They tell us that Laetare Sunday is halfway through, and Pope Innocent, some number, 3, in 1216, told us we should have something to celebrate in the middle because it's so effing long. I mean, he knew.
Right.
He knew. And so you're supposed to have something joyful. So it's like a bit of something rose-colored.
Yeah.
Or pink cocktails, but really, if you're drinking a pink cocktail, I don't know what to tell you.
There's two things that I find comical about this.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. The church actually advises, well, not the church, but Drinking with the Saints, advises that you drink something pink. Like, go find a ridiculously colored cocktail and just dig into it, all right? That's not normally your Catholic sort of sphere. But we do love our pink as a sign of, like,
it's
celebration.
Rose.
Right,
okay.
rose-colored.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the fact that they think there's actually 3 different popes, or maybe more, I'm guessing there's more, that were actually innocent. Like, there was a Pope Innocent I who's like, no, I'm so innocent that that's going to be my pope's name.
Well,
and there were multiple successors that said, I too am as innocent as the first Pope Innocent.
You know, though, in fairness, I do not know if the second and third Innocents chose their names in honor of a predecessor who was maybe a great guy, was actually as innocent as he claimed. But the first Innocent is either some puritanical fucker who was elevating virtue names, or you know that's the worst dude ever.
Yeah, no, not, exactly.
Call me Papa Innocent.
Right, yeah. Like Papa Dirtbag.
Yeah,
should
scoundrel.
Pope Dirtbag first.
But let us also consider number 3 was in 1216. And those people were doing Lent for real because he references the severe strain they've been under.
Yes, this is also true.
So actual fasting?
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Let us eat sardines and nothing but sardines, says Jeremy Irons in the show about the Pope.
Wow.
So we are almost at St. Paddy's Day, but not quite.
Not quite.
We'll be posting this the day before St. Paddy's Day, I believe. So we're kind of getting
a fasting day. It's a Friday.
It is. It's a Friday. But it's Thursday now. And
yes. And so guess, you know, how are you going to do with this St. Patrick's Day that will be potato-less for you? You will not be enjoying those root vegetables that you love so much.
Not going to lie.
Jumbo legumes?
I'm going on vacation.
Yeah, you have no fries on that vacation. I better not hear about you sneaking.
No, I won't.
Some,
I really won't.
Boiled potatoes or some shit.
I really won't. I honestly won't. But I'm not going to have like a
You're not
going to
plan on cheating this time? I see.
I would have planned on cheating. I did plan on cheating. When you first revealed that I was going to have to give up potatoes, I was like, St. Paddy's Day will be a cheat day, which is not actually cheating because I'm planning for it.
Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Drunk Lives of the Saints.
Working on the first part.
But I was like, no, like, I'm going to do St. Paddy's Day. But as it turns out, Mrs. Guest and I will be taking a weekend away.
Yes.
Enjoying a little bit of weekend vacation.
Yes.
And I don't think that I'm going to be that tempted by potatoes. I think there will be other options on the menu besides potatoes. So that'll be good.
I'm really rejoicing for you and trying not to be an awful person because I just recently read this book, but that's great.
It also means no corned beef and no cabbage. Like, I'm not going to do a full-on St. Patty's Day.
You can't have corned beef and cabbage without your potatoes, or you just won't have the opportunity.
I mean, unless I go to a restaurant somewhere that has it on the menu. Like, normally we would do a big thing at home and be like, it's St. Patty's Day, we're going to do a whole... But not so much. Mm-hmm, so so it shouldn't be that rough, as opposed to your shellfish issue.
Go have a sip. Yeah, my shellfish allergy. I have so much empathy now and compassion for those who actually cannot eat the shellfish. Because come Easter Sunday, the risen Lord and I will be having like a crab feed.
Yeah, do
but,
it.
But everybody else who has a real allergy will not. So that's sad.
Yeah, you should
I'm
just
fine.
Be,
I'm just freaking fine.
I expect to find you on Easter Sunday like under like a mountain of shrimp tails. Dude, just like all the tails like piled just, up over the
I'm
top.
I'm
going
to go to one of those restaurants and get like the seafood tower, you know, like all the shellfish at once.
Yeah.
But what if I like gave myself an allergy by like not eating it? Like what if I suddenly develop one?
No, that's not going to happen.
You will have given me Lent forever.
40 days does not, like, it's not like when you go vegetarian for, like, 10 years and then you try and eat meat, right? Like, your enzymes aren't there. No, 40 days, you're fine. You're going to be okay.
So, that's our Lent catch-up.
Yes.
We're going to give you a cocktail recipe in the middle of this episode. So
yeah.
So, hang in there.
We're
going to
change it up.
Not a pink cocktail.
Not a pink one.
Actually, it kind of is, but not for Laterre Sunday.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk about a couple of saints.
Yeah.
And you did kind of a deep dive, a lesser known saint, not St. Patrick. We did that last year.
Right.
I don't recommend you checking out that particular episode.
I highly recommend that you check out last year's St. Patrick's Day episode. If you haven't listened to it, go back and find us at St. Patty's Day 1 year ago.
Who are we talking about today?
We tend to, from time to time, we've done St. Ignatius, we've done St. Patrick. There's a Drunk Lives of the Saints episode that comes through every now and then. Mm-hmm. It is not, for copyright purposes, a direct ripoff of Drunk History on Comedy Central, which totally would be inappropriate.
You can be inspired by anything.
Yeah. But, recount the lives of our, I think actually a year ago I said recant the lives of our favorite saints.
Decant is
which
more
is
like.
Actually like undoing the lives of them, which we're not doing.
We did give the heresy warning at the start, so if that happens, it's not our fault.
But we recount the lives of saints in a way where we just kind of tell the story of someone who maybe you know their life story, maybe you don't. St. Patrick was an interesting one because a lot of people think they know about St. Patrick. Like, he drove all the snakes out of Ireland. Turns out that's not true.
Right.
It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor.
Yeah.
But we're going to be doing Drunk Lives of the Saints once again with the lesser known saints that also have a feast day on March 17th.
Yes.
So we've got a couple of saints lined up who share the feast day with St. Patrick. And I think it kind of like...
They get overshadowed.
They get overshadowed. And also, like, one of the things that we need to always sort of throw out there as a caveat is that St. Patrick's Day, it's a lovely holiday. St. Patrick would absolutely be appalled with how St. Patrick's Day is celebrated.
It's true. Guys, St. Patrick was actually, like, a really holy dude.
Yeah.
Like, he was not a carouser.
Like,
he probably hated us.
You intentionally violate rivers with green dye and also puke all over the streets of most major cities in my name?
We
like,
violate
he
the
would
rivers.
Be upset with that.
We also violate the beer. There's green beer.
But there's a flip side to it, which is also, like, people know who St. Patrick is. People are having fun. They're celebrating. They're doing things on St. Patrick's Day that honor someone who was a really important figure in the life of the church in Ireland. So, you know.
But we've talked a lot about him.
Right.
All right. So today we're going to be highlighting a couple of people who are, well, one who's much less known and then one who's more like a biblical saint. I have little opinions about biblical saints too.
But I would give $10 to anybody who knows that your chosen Drunk Lives of the Saint today actually shares their feast day with St. Patrick.
I don't think I will agree with you. I will not take that bet.
Right.
Yes.
But we will come to that eventually. First up, we're gonna share a saint who shares her feast day with the well-known St. Patrick, March 17th. St. Gertrude of Nivelles.
Gertrude of Nivelles.
I will also give $10 to anybody who knows where the fuck Nivelles is.
Or why Gertrude is like a very Germanic name and like Nivelles, it sounds French.
Doesn't it though?
It does.
You're close.
Okay.
You're close.
All right, so tell me about this. What?
All right. So St. Gertrude of Nivelles was born in 626. So we're talking about a 7th century saint. And she was born in Landen. Of the Kingdom of Austrasia, which I will still give you $10 if you can tell me where the fuck she was born.
I think he's making up countries now.
Austrasia.
Well, it couldn't be Australia.
Well, it could be Austrasia. I have no idea how most of what I'm about to talk about is
like,
pronounced.
Did somebody like mistype Austria? Are you reading Austria wrong?
No. I'm not so drunk that I actually am cross-eyed.
That would be awesome.
Austrasia.
Okay, where?
She died in Nivelles,
I mean, she's gotta be
which
European.
Is also in yeah. Austrasia. Okay. So, right. Yes, she is, in fact, European. So if you said Europe, I owe you
$10. I did say Europe.
Now, I don't, though, because we're in Europe. Europe's a continent.
Okay. You're just backtracking, but that's fine.
All right.
Go ahead.
So here's the deal. St. Gertrude was born, actually, into a pretty wealthy family. She had, a lot of political power wrapped up in her family.
Mm-hmm.
Only if you are like a European 7th century history nerd do you actually understand all of the, like, the power dynamics in her family. Her father was Pepin of Landen.
Pepin of Landen. Wait, have you told us where Landen is yet?
No.
We're building up. All right, just making sure I didn't miss it.
Her father was Pepin of Landen.
Okay.
Her mother...
Intrigue. Wealth. Got
is
it.
Actually considered... She's venerated in the church as well because her mom was a pretty heavy influence in, like, turning Gertrude into, like, a person of faith.
Okay.
So dad was a political figure. Mom was Ita of Metz. I-double-T-A.
Ita of Metz.
Ita. I don't know. But...
Also Germanic sounding. Okay.
So the first real story that we get from St. Gertrude's life is that when she was around the age of 10, dad went to her and was like, hey, you should totally marry this, like, prince or somebody, like a prince or a duke or someone of influence.
And marriage was, like, a political bargaining chip amongst the wealthy forever. So that makes sense.
Yes.
All right. All
so there was this pitch that was like, you should marry this person so that we can have this political kind of power. And she basically said, I will have no spouse but Christ my Lord. All right. 10 years old. She says,
boys are gross.
I'm only going to be married to Jesus. All right?
Yep.
Now,
smart kid. Smart girl. Like her.
Over the course of her life, her brothers marry powerful political figures. Her sister, younger sister, marries powerful political figures. And her family is on the rise. The Pippins, as they called them. I am not kidding.
The Pippins.
Were like Scotty of the Chicago Bulls, okay. Scotty Pippen.
Pippen descended from the Austrasian.
They're
Pippins.
On the rise. Okay. The Pippins are on the rise, but Gertrude is a holdout, and she's like, I'm not going to go and marry somebody just for this sake of political alliance.
Good for her.
Now, the word on the street of 7th century historical scholars is that had dad actually lived long enough, they probably would have been able to force her to marry somebody. And then the Pippins would have had more power than the Merovingians.
The Pippins would have been powerful puppeteers?
Yes, the powerful puppets of the Pippins would have had control. But dad actually died early on, like, relatively in her life, because she only lived to be 33. So this is a young woman who became a saint.
That's like Jesus' age, though. That's a good sign.
Right?
Good for her. Yeah.
I feel like that might be a bit of a fib when you talk about 7th century, but whatever. So the Pippins would have had this, like, wonderful power had she caved and said, yes, okay, I will marry somebody. But dad dies, mm-hmm, and mom, Ita... she says, in order to keep my daughter from having to marry somebody for political purposes, we are going to found a monastery in Nivelles.
As you do.
Yes. So we found a monastery. Mom becomes the abbess because she's not married anymore. Mm-hmm. And then eventually she's able to bring St. Gertrude up to be the new abbess of Nivelles. Now, Nivelles is a monastery of both sides. So there are monks and nuns that live in two separate wings of the monastery. So most likely she was working with an abbot. But, like, big things start to happen over the course of her life. Couple of things before she even starts out. First of all, this one's a little bit fucked up, but it has to do with why her icons are like the way she is.
Oh, she has good icons?
She does have good icons.
Dude, all right.
Okay.
You got me. Okay.
First of all, she will be iconized. Is that a thing? I don't know.
Icons are written, not drawn. That's about as much as I know for
trivia. Iconized. I'm going to go with iconized. Right. I'm going to say that she's verbed. She's iconized.
All right.
With iconicized. I feel like that's better.
Iconicized. Yeah. Let's do that.
With a crown.
Uh-huh.
But she never actually had, like, a crown. Like, she came from a powerful family. She may have had a political crown if she had gone a different route.
Right.
But Mom shaved her head into a crown so that she could actually dedicated to... It was a sign that she would be dedicated to Christ, the true king. She had it all, right? Man. Well, did she have it all?
Yes.
When your mom shaves your head and have a
hair crown, you have it. Because it represents her, like, not having to marry... But still having, like, her power and her prestige.
Yeah.
Her mom didn't want her to be all bald.
I suppose. Okay. So she shaves her head.
I think because it's fascinating.
It was part of making her, like, unappealing to others and also dedicating her to God, right? So, like, make her unappealing to these, like, princes that wanted to marry her for political reasons, but also, like, a crown to be, like, she's Jesus's, like, bride.
In the icons.
Yes.
Is her crown a hair crown?
No.
Boo.
In the icons, it's a regular crown. And I agree. I agree.
You had me really excited about icons. Boo to that. And I'm disappointed.
The other icon...
St. Lucy holds her eyes on a platter.
That is... Saying. I know. Yeah, it's true. The other icon that you will find her with is she is, for lack of a better term, the patron saint of crazy cat ladies. So you'll see
they have a patron saint?
With a crown and some cats sometimes.
Dude, how is this not, like, blowing up everywhere?
Now,
like, people love cats and crazy cat ladies. Like, I am confused.
According to my research, Wikipedia.
not actual research.
It was only around the 80s, like, the 1980s, that she was actually attributed as the patron of cats and started to be, like, St. Gertrude. Like, St. Gertrude's Day is, like... Crazy cats are like people who love cats are like, oh, my cats are gonna celebrate St. Gertrude's Day.
My gosh, is there photographic evidence?
Yes, there's like.
Okay, so what you're telling me is some crazy cat lady got on Wikipedia and decided to make St. Gertrude of Nivelles the patron saint of cat ladies.
Yes.
Because, gosh, I know some cat ladies. Shout out to all my cat ladies out there.
Totally, yes.
You have a patron saint. Yep. Her name Saint is Gertrude.
St. Gertrude. Celebrate. Instead of going to the bar for St. Patty's Day.
Your choices are.
You stay home with your cats and you celebrate St. Gertrude.
You pour whiskey in each of their little cat dishes.
Exactly.
And you toast your kitties.
Now, and also, conjunction with being patron saint of cats, she's also the patron against mice. Now,
naturally,
the idea that she was the patron against mice and rats actually predates the idea that she is the patron of cats. So, like, I'm guessing, like, around the plague times, like, in the middle, like, the dark ages, is when people started to pray to St. Gertrude, like, keep the mice and the rats away from my family members.
Yeah.
Because they say that's, like, Middle Ages is when that started to happen. And then eventually that develops into, in the 1980s, like, in our lifetime, patron of crazy cat
ladies. I have so many questions. Like, how have I never met one of these devotees of St. Gertrude of Nivelles? Yeah. Also, it's a race, y'all. Let's get those business plans rolling. There should be St. Gertrude, like, tchotchkes everywhere, right?
Totally. So, St. Gertrude's mom, Itta... Founds the monastery, shaves her child's head to keep her away from all of the bad men that want to marry her for political reasons.
The struggle was real.
Right. And they found a monastery, and eventually mom dies, St. Itta passes away, and St. Gertrude, actually, so St. Itta is actually, like, she is recognized
mom and daughter
as, like,
saints.
Mom and daughter, yeah.
Okay.
So St. Gertrude takes over the monastery, and St. Gertrude's actually, like, she's kind of a spiritual badass. Like, she has visions, like, she's a sort of kind of one of those people who is an ecstatic, like she is experiencing visions of Christ.
Does she speak in cat tongues?
Oh my God, I really... If she did not before, she does as of this moment.
That's how I think of her.
Yeah. She'd be like, meow, 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 meow. And it's like somebody else is interpreting for her.
And then when it's like a bad person, like a yowl.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah. St. Gertrude.
No, for sure. That's a fact. That's a church drunk fact.
Add it to Wikipedia.
Take it to Wikipedia. I am. I'm going to put it back into the Wikipedia.
Oh, my gosh. So
St. Gertrude, she has visions of, like, the fullness of Christ, like, things like fire, like the Holy Spirit fire and all these different things. There's a few miracles attributed to her. There are some sailors who were sailing, and they were attacked by a sea monster.
As you are.
Right. And the first thing they did was start to appeal to their pagan gods because they were
fools.
They were from, get this, Ireland, because
they were leaving.
The Irish storyline starts to play in heavily to St. Gertrude's life,
who happens
to have accidentally, or maybe perhaps intentionally by her Irish biographers, died on March 17th. So,
okay.
These Irish sailors were out there, they were attacked by a sea monster. First, they appeal to the pagan gods and nothing happens, but then they ask St. Gertrude to get rid of the sea monster, and lo and behold...
No more Krakens.
Adios, sea monsters.
She takes care of mice. She take care of rats. She take care of sea monsters. Okay.
In her monastery, she actually became pretty well known for welcoming Irish, pilgrims. All
right.
So the Irish at the time, in the 7th century, they were actually some of the best, like, scholars. Like, biblical scholars, like, the monasteries in Ireland, they were actually starting to send people out into the world. So she starts to kind of, like, welcome these, like, travelers, pilgrims. Yeah. There is Foilin and Ultan, which I'm pretty sure is in Gaelic, and I just mispronounced.
I was like, there's no way you said that right,
no.
But Gaelic
absolutely.
Is a mystery, so it's fine.
There's a 12% chance that
it's
Foilin and Ultan are actually
the like-
names.
You know, Jack.
Sean and James.
Yeah.
But it's Foilin and Ultan
when
you look at it. And it was these two Irish monks that were brothers, and they came to her monastery, and they sort of became her biographers, which is part of why, okay, this story of Irish sailors that were attacked by sea monsters that appealed to Gertrude.
Convenient.
Okay, a little convenient. And she dies on March 17th, the feast of St. Patrick. Also convenient.
But what this really tells us is that these Irish biographers, these men of the century, the 7th century, really respected her and wanted to put her up on that level. So, you know what? I will give them that artistic license.
Yeah.
For all we know, she did defeat a Kraken and welcomed Irish sailors.
For sure. Foilin and Ultan, also known as Sean and James, thank you for your contributions.
Here.
Telling us about the life of St. Gertrude. Apparently, when she died on March 17th.
Yep.
Her body, after a few days, emitted not the smell of decay, but a sweet smell, because she died in a state of ecstasy and communion with the Lord.
Well, hear then, to St. Gertrude.
To St. Gertrude.
Let us raise a glass.
Yeah.
You know, I am pretty proud of you. Like, there is no way you could have known that on March 17th there was this obscure saint who was the patron saint of cat ladies.
Cat ladies.
Like, I just want to, like, rest in that for a moment.
Patron,
I want that to soak in
of
everyone.
Of cats and against mice.
If you think that the Catholic faith is not relevant to you, let me tell you, we have a patron saint of fucking cat ladies.
If you have roof rats, pray to St. Gertrude to get those
goddamn
fuckers
rats.
Out of there.
Plague. It's like
the
flu.
Yeah.
All right. So, that's pretty cool.
So, tell me about a cocktail before we jump ahead.
Yes. So, here, cocktail break.
Yep.
Here we go. So, we're coming up on the fifth Sunday of Lent, which you may not know, as I did not, that it's called Passion Sunday, and not in, like, the passion way we think about now, but, like, in the suffering way. Like, we're getting ready. We've crossed the hump of Lent. We are heading towards...
Last week was all about...
Triduum.
Celebration.
Yeah. Pope Innocent wanted you to have a break last week.
This week,
we'd like to, like, crack the whip and remind you.
Let's take a big prink... big pink prink. Let's take a big pink break from Lent, everybody. And just celebrate for a while.
Celebrate!
But then next week, it's fucking Passion Sunday.
You get that blood flowing again on your back. Yeah.
Right.
So, Unfortunately, it's Passion Sunday, and we're heading toward Jesus' suffering, his passion, so it's not funny, but it's still time to drink, because you're sad.
Everybody needs to drink.
Yeah, so, we have a nice passion cocktail.
Yes.
From our favorite bug, Drinking with the Saints. And it is, so I encourage you to make yourself a passion cocktail and pour a little bit out for Jesus.
Yeah.
Because foreshadowing, it's coming. So you take 1 ounce tequila, 1.5 ounces of cranberry juice, that's just a big splash, 1.5 ounces of lime, or 1/2 ounce, excuse me, of lime juice. Whoa,
don't overdo the lime juice.
I would be fine with it. All right, I'm sorry. Let me rephrase.
Makes it
a big shot of cranberry juice.
Yeah.
Half a shot of lime juice.
But it makes it more Lenten if it's more sour. So put as much lime juice as you need.
Who the fuck is measuring lime juice? I'm sorry. Right. Take a lime and squeeze it into your drink. If you want more, put more in. That's it. All right. 1 shot of Grand Marnier.
Okay.
A lime slice for garnish if you're fancy. But you just pour it all in. Accept the Grand Marnier and the lime into a shaker filled with ice. Shake it 40 times. It's always 40 times.
Yeah.
Just means a lot. Who cares? Straight into a cocktail glass and top with the Grand Marnier. And garnish with lime. And Grand Marnier tastes pretty good. So that is not so much of a suffering cocktail until you get to the bitter cranberry.
And in fact, Grand Marnier is often included in like a
Cosmo.
Well, a Cosmo. But like a lot of times, like it's a top shelf margarita has like a Grand Marnier. Oh, that's true. Float. So you end up with basically Passion Sunday is a margarita plus some cranberry juice.
Well, this read to me a lot like a Cosmo. I don't know what would really be the difference. Never made one, once again.
Never had a Cosmo, so.
You guys, all this stuff is just fluffery. All you need is vodka and lime.
Or tequila and lime in the case
that would be more suffering. Passion Sunday. You should probably do the tequila and the lime.
Yeah. If you really want to suffer, just.
Oh, that is the difference. It's a tequila.
Pour out a giant shot of tequila and drink it.
Yeah, for Jesus.
Make it shitty tequila if you really want to suffer.
Anyway, there's a cocktail for you.
Thus, our cocktail interlude has passed. Yes. And it's time for Dizzy to tell us about her favorite March 17th saint.
Yes, I picked Joseph of Arimathea.
Joseph of Arimathea.
Number one, have you ever heard of Joseph of Arimathea? Yes, you have.
Absolutely.
Because he's mentioned in all 4 Gospels. Which I did not know. Not a lot of things, guys, are in actually all this 4 Gospels.
True. This is
so
true.
So I really was proud of Joseph of Arimathea.
John breaks from the pack a lot of times.
Yeah, but in this case, he stuck with it. So
everybody agrees.
I was pretty proud of that. I like the scripture stuff. I like the scripture stories, which is why I picked him. He's kind of a cool dude. And it goes with this whole Passion Sunday because we're looking ahead to Jesus' passion.
Right.
Joseph of Arimathea shows up late in the Gospels, but he does appear in all 4. So we're talking, you know, the earliest age of the church. He was a contemporary of Jesus, probably older person.
Yeah, most likely.
So what do we know? So with Joseph of Arimathea, there are lots of rumors.
Yes.
And like legends and not a lot of facts.
Right.
So like figuring out facts from any scripture source is kind of an iffy thing to start with.
You've got to read between the lines a little bit to figure out who this guy is.
But scripture scholars do have some ideas, and there's some different theories, and some of them are more evidence-based, I would say, than others. But pretty much all 4 Gospels tell us that after Jesus was crucified, somebody named Joseph went to Pilate, and he had some pull because he was a well-to-do person. I'll talk more about that. And took Jesus' body and put it in the tomb. Everybody agrees that that happened.
And then he drove all of the snakes out of Israel.
No.
Oh.
There are still probably, I mean, it's a desert. Like, you can't drive all the snakes out of the desert. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying.
He drove all the manticores out of Israel.
On March 17th, I only recognize saints that drove all of the snakes out of a place that starts with I.
Wow. That is a really interesting connection. Your Venn diagram just went crazy on me right there. Mind blown.
Okay. I don't know if I ever actually revealed about St. Gertrude where she was from. It's Belgium. It doesn't start with I. I would have called it Flanders.
Yes, you fucker. You never even told us where she was from.
I didn't. I totally didn't. I really meant to. But it was Austrasia, also known as Belgium, also known as, in my mind, I call that Flanders back in the day.
Flanders.
But it must have been
fucking know Flanders.
Pre-Flanders and now Austrasia. But it doesn't start with I, so she could not have possibly driven all of the snakes out of it.
The sound is similar.
Australasia.
Yeah. I mean, Ireland, Israel, I don't know, whatever.
All I know is St. Joseph drove all the snakes out of Israel. Continue.
Yes, St. Joseph of Arimathea drove all the snakes out of Israel.
And Belgium.
And he inspired St. Patrick to drive them all out of Ireland because yes. All the snake driving stories come from one snaky source.
This is true.
The Book of Genesis. All right. Yeah. So... Joseph of Arimathea, who we think was actually on the Sanhedrin. Fun vocab word, everybody.
Bingo.
Sanhedrin is the, like, Jewish council, like, their supreme court, essentially. Like,
yep.
This little puppet-ish court that the Romans allowed to function and, right. You know, regulate on their own people. The people who essentially sentenced Jesus to death. And so Joseph, like, yes. Abstained from that. So he managed to be kind of this paradoxical guy. Another reason why I like him.
Yeah.
At this time. Because he was both a member of the Sanhedrin. So probably a Sadducee or a Pharisee. So somebody who's, like, schooled in the law. Was an upstanding Jew. As well as probably a well-to-do-ish citizen. Because the Sanhedrin were lying in their pockets down in Jerusalem.
Yes.
Arimathea is a little area in Judea. So a town. So we know he's from southern Israel, near Jerusalem probably, in the Sanhedrin, but also a follower of Jesus, or had compassion for him, or maybe follower of John. Yeah. We don't really know.
So he was probably well-to-do.
He had money.
Yeah.
And so he asks Pilate for the body, and because he's got some standing, Pilate's like, sure, like, I'm so done with this. Yeah. I already washed my hands, guys.
Right, right.
So Joseph takes him and puts him into a tomb. Some people think maybe that it was a tomb that Joseph had already bought because that was something you do, kind of like now if you bought a plot. Like he had a place to go put a body. And it was kind of tight timing because depending on which gospel you read, the days might be different. But it's near the time of Passover, so most of the Jewish stuff is shut down. But Joseph is able to hustle Jesus into a tomb, and we all know what happens 3 days later. So Joseph is held up as, like, a saint because of that alone.
Yep.
So let us sidebar here. Saint Joseph of Arimathea. I don't think I've ever heard it said that way.
Right. We don't talk about Joseph of Arimathea as a saint.
Right. And I have a bone to pick with this because we talk about all these apostles
because
as saints.
Because he was a Jew.
A Jew?
Right.
Yeah. A lot of people were Jews in the New Testament.
Wait.
Everybody except the Romans.
What are you talking about?
Okay, we are really yo-yoing hard on what we think people may or may not know. But yes, Jesus was Jewish.
And what?
We should just say that every day.
Jesus was a Jew.
It's like somebody new.
So St. Joseph is a saint, even though he was probably, in his lifetime, for the most part, Jewish.
Yes, and perhaps a persecutor of people like Jesus. Like, he didn't, I mean... You know, not that I want to go digging too hard, but, like, Joseph didn't really, like, help Jesus out until he died.
Yeah.
But Jesus needed that help, so we're grateful.
What about St. Paul? St. Paul. How was he in terms of the Jewish Christian spectrum?
Super Jew.
Super Jew.
He was the super Jew.
Yeah.
Saul, for God's sake.
And then Christian.
Yeah, and then Christian. So, like, right. So why do we talk about St. Paul, but we don't talk about St. Joseph of Arimathea? We just have, like, if you're a scripture scholar nerd, you know Joseph of Arimathea.
That's an excellent question.
So it's unfair. And also, we were, Guess and I kind of talking earlier, like, Mary Magdalene. Why isn't she St. Mary Magdalene?
Yeah.
She actually is technically that.
Yeah, she
so
is. She's
canonized. Henceforth, we will speak of St. Joseph of Arimathea.
St. Mary Magdalene.
And St. Mary Magdalene and all the freaking saints from those early days because they mostly were martyrs of the faith and deserve their shout out. If we're going to keep canonizing popes, let's at least give them their titles.
If we have like
Pope
Innocent III and yet we can't Saint Joseph of Arimathea who gave up like some of his wealth to be able to allow like a proper burial place for Jesus. And also the Last Supper was said to have taken place like at St. Joseph of Arimathea's house.
It could have been
in the upper room of Joseph of Arimathea's place, probably.
It had to be his or somebody like him who was a southern Jew who was sympathetic to Jesus but also had some kind of means and a place to host them. Yeah. And you know, Mary Magdalene probably falls in that category too.
Right.
Somebody who had some money.
Yeah.
And could support the ministry. So that kind of gives St. Joseph of Arimathea,
his
like credit, right? Yeah. Like he's in the Gospels. He has this important role of sheltering Jesus' body. But then his story takes like bizarro turns.
Tell me about the bizarro.
We have like lots of other people in the first century, like councils, we can keep track of them. But, like, St. Joseph just got, like, co-opted by Great Britain. They're like, we'll take that guy.
Yeah.
And so we have all these, like, legends and mysteries of, like, where he was. And that even gets to the point where, like, St. Joseph of Arimathea and, like, adolescent Jesus, like, took a road trip to England. I'm sorry.
Of course they did.
This did not happen.
Of course they did.
But this is how much England wants to claim St. Joseph of Arimathea.
Yeah.
So Glastonbury is kind of the guiltiest party where they're like, we need to elevate, like, our city status. So we're going to say that Glastonbury Abbey hosted adolescent Jesus and St. Joseph of Arimathea.
I don't see a problem
back
with
in
this.
The day.
Yeah.
Sure. There's lots of problems with this. But that's not it. All okay. right. So they were there. They walked in Avalon. They were down in Cornwall, totally. In the south of England. Who, like, Cornwall, like, claims St. Joseph yeah. of Arimathea. Like, yes, he was here on a pilgrimage.
They were probably there at the Beatles' last concert.
Funny that you should mention music. He's got a lot of pop culture shout-outs, too. So, like, okay, so one rumor is that, like, St. Joseph of Arimathea, like, took a road trip with Jesus because they were relatives. So there's this one theory, because that would have been a Jewish tradition at the time, that whoever was the, like, nearest male older relative would bury the person. So, like, they say, okay, St. Joseph of Arimathea was probably related to Joseph of Nazareth, Jesus', you know, father, and he... Yeah. That's how he could get the body. So maybe they were relatives, and that's why he could take him on a road trip. The next theory, though, is that St. Philip, who we all fucking call St. Philip, even Saint though he's Philip. Just an apostle, who yeah. knows what Philip did. But whatever.
Also a Jew. Until he was a Christian.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like Joseph.
I don't think they even thought they were Christians. Anyway, so Philip, the second theory is that Philip sends St. Joseph of Arimathea on a mission trip to the UK, and okay. is like, go convert those people.
Yes.
Some snakes escaped. We think they're ready. You go on up there and clean up shop.
So it is about eliminating snakes.
I wanted to tie it in for you. I didn't want to leave your snake hanging.
Never leave my snake hanging.
It's not my job. Not my job.
We're not going to be able to recover from that, quite frankly. There's going to be a gap. This is normally when we would play the little music, like, delay.
Okay.
But it's too good to
no,
even
fine.
Interrupt.
It's
okay,
fine.
Continue.
Did you know that Van Morrison put the legend of St. Joseph of Arimathea in his song Summertime? And he talks about Jesus walking on the shores of Avalon.
I did not.
There's no snakes. All right. How about this?
Okay.
William Blake...
Yep.
Based on the same legend, has a lovely poem which is set to the music of Sir Hubert Parry as Jerusalem, and
okay.
it quotes that St. Joseph of Arimathea was hanging out in England's green, pleasant pastures. So that sounds lovely.
I feel like it's bullshit, though.
It's because Jerusalem is going to come to England. Like, I'm
like Zion. Like, England
yes,
is Zion.
Right. Like, they brought it to England. Like, the heart of the real Jerusalem, where Jesus was, it's in England now. It's like in fucking Cornwall. Guys, nothing's in Cornwall.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Okay, anyway, sorry, Cornwall, but there's
I
nothing
I just feel
there.
Like, I feel like, with the exception of a couple guys that have dreadlocks in, like, Piccadilly Square or whatever it's called,
mm-hmm.
like, there's not really many people that claim that Zion is England.
I wonder if any British people think that. But,
I don't know.
You know, it's quoted in recent stuff, Van Morrison, and older stuff. You know,
you
William
do what
Blake.
You gotta do.
Okay, but the best legend about St. Joseph of Arimathea
yes.
comes to the Holy Grail.
Mm.
Now, I have not read all the Dan Brown books because I can't be bothered, but I think it comes up in that too. But there's this rumor that he took the Holy Grail and hid it in England. That when St. Philip sent him out on his missionary journey, he's like, oh,
like
just take
St. Joseph
chalice.
Of Arimathea.
Mm-hmm. He
Which
became
makes
a missionary.
Sense because the Last Supper was in his house, technically,
yes.
in his upper
so
room.
So it was his cup, guys.
So he
it
would
was
take
his
it.
Fucking
it was
cup.
His cup. Yeah.
Yeah. So he took it.
He
and
provided the silverware for the Last Supper.
And the legend, it wasn't silverware. It was like woodworkings. Or maybe they did it their hands.
I don't know. What the
They didn't have like forks and knives. What are you talking about?
What do you,
like reclined
what,
to, like
What am I talking about? What are you talking about? You're the one that said they had no silverware. What would you call it?
I think they use like leaves and shit. Like,
okay.
Pick things up. Anyway, so
provided the leaves and shit for the Last Supper.
St. Joseph of Arimathea took the chalice, which was his anyways, and his pilgrim's staff. That's all he took.
Mm-hmm.
His pilgrim's staff and walked to England.
To England. Makes perfect sense.
Yes, and he founded Glastonbury Abbey. None of this is true.
Did he walk across the water?
No.
Okay,
he walked like through Africa.
He walked through Africa to get to England. Yeah, this makes perfect sense.
The Strait of Gibraltar, I'm just going to say. Oh, yeah. It's also him.
Okay. All right.
Okay, but the Glastonbury thorn is said to flower on Christmas Day every year and blossom from the plant in the churchyard of St. John's Glastonbury to decorate the Christmas breakfast table of the Queen each year. So Joseph of Arimathea is still hosting fancy meals for Jesus and the Queen of England.
Makes perfect sense.
So, you know,
the logic is faultless.
So I feel like he's really half and half because he's got this great, you know, gospel credit.
Yes.
And that is something to be a saint for him.
Absolutely.
And I like him.
He loved Jesus before any of us had the opportunity to do so.
And to be kind of countercultural.
Yes.
You know, like he was his own thinking guy. And we know him. He's actually mentioned in a few different sources. So like he probably was a real person. I believe St. Joseph of Arimathea is real. I don't think he quite probably made it to get all the snakes out of England. I think he lost himself along the way there.
Probably not. But yeah. I think that Joseph of Arimathea is... That was not the proper pronunciation. Damn it. Drunk Lives of the Saints. But I think that his
drinks are kicking in.
Presence, like Joseph of Arimathea's kind of like symbolic meaning in terms of who he was, gives hope to people who are living in the United States in a time where basically we are the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Like, we are not poor people. Like, for the most part, people in the United States who are celebrating their Catholic faith.
They have some kind of means. Of them do.
Yeah, like some do and some don't, right? But, like, people who have means, they can say, Joseph of Arimathea is a model for how to pronounce things properly and also actually have an impact with your position, your wealth, your whatever.
Yeah, I think it's... Right, and he did have an impact with his. Yes. You know, like, Jesus being clean, and it says, like, he put the myrrh on him and, like, put the aloes.
Right.
Like, provided for all these material things that we need, and I think he, like, as you say, he is a good example of we need material means to have a good life and to help others. Like, you know, he does draw attention to that, like, there is nothing sinful in having the wealth to put your friend in a proper burial and have him have the rituals and the herbs and all these things that he should have had, because then Saint Mary Magdalene, had somewhere to go on Easter morning.
Right.
I mean, what if Jesus had just hung there like a common criminal? You know, like, I don't know, he did, but for a long time.
And what Jesus said was, it's easier for like a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich person to get into heaven. But he didn't say it's impossible. Like, he wasn't like, fuck you all, it's impossible. So like, yes, you have to be willing to give up. You have to be generous. You have to do... But, like, for a rich person,
you have picked a better patronage for Joseph of Arimathea. Like, he could be the patron of those who have some means.
Yes.
You know, for those of you with some disposable income, look to Joseph of Arimathea.
Right.
But actually, he's the patron saint of funeral directors and, like, embalmers.
So here's what's interesting. On the church drunk Lenten reading list is The Relic Master by Christopher Buckley, who is usually a political commentary writer, but he wrote sort of a religious satire instead of political satire. And it's very much about the shroud, like the burial shroud of Jesus, which technically, right, imagine Jesus rises from the grave, leaves the burial shroud behind in the tomb, which belonged to Joseph of Arimathea.
Or he bought it.
Who provided the tomb, right?
Right,
and so
right.
The burial shroud would have started with Joseph
Saint
of Arimathea.
Joseph of Arimathea.
So if you want to track down the true burial shroud, which there's the Shroud of Turin, which, you know, like, maybe, who knows.
Probably not.
But, like, if you actually were interested in the history of the burial shroud, the first person that you would try and track it down to would be Joseph of Arimathea, because if Jesus actually did leave it behind, it would be in a tomb that belonged to Joseph. Saint Joseph.
You know, I just can't get into all that stuff. But, like, yes, if that's what you're into, that's a good starting place. The other, actually, I had a book shout out for him, too, because when I read that, you know, it makes sense. He's the patron saint of embalmers.
Yep.
It's not a religious book, But those people do really interesting work.
Yeah.
Like, funeral directing is, like, it's kind of a freaky, like, job to have. But
it is.
It's a kind of a special job. I'm like, I don't know. Most everybody needs it.
You do.
But I, you know, Mary Roach's books are really famous and popular. But her book, Stiff, like, talks a lot about the psychology of funeral directors. So if you're interested in that, I think it's a good read in small chunks, interspersed with something heavy.
And if you're interested in cats, then read about St. Gertrude, the patroness of cat ladies.
St. Gertrude of Nivelle. Well, I feel that our drunkiness is kicking in.
Yeah.
And we've talked about a lot of snakes.
We have.
And St. Gertrude of Nivelle and St. Joseph of Arimathea.
Mission
who may or may not have made it to Cornwall and Glastonbury. Yeah. And that kind of takes us to the end. You can tell us who you like also for March 17th. There's actually a few more.
There are.
If you are a crazy cat lady, we'd love to hear from you. If you have driven snakes out of anywhere, you could hit us up. You can
tweet. If you celebrate St. Gertrude's Day as like a
yes. If real you are holiday. Going rogue. And are going to celebrate St. Gertrude of Nivelle's Crazy Cat Lady Day instead of St. Patrick, please send us a photo. We would like to celebrate with you.
Yeah.
You can tweet at guests at churchdrunkpod. You can email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com. You can read our Lenten reading list at the blog at churchdrunk.com.
Yep.
And next week, who fucking knows what we'll be doing.
Yeah, I mean, we're gonna do another one.
Keep drinking.
And it's going to be getting closer to the end of Lent, which this is the time where we start to realize how long Lent is.
Right. And
it's
still recommending that you go read something.
Yeah. Get some reading. Check out the reading list.
Yep.
Enjoy a little bit of Lenty goodness.
Make yourself a passion cocktail.
Make a passion cocktail for Passion Sunday.
And
we'll see you next week on Church Drunk,
where
it's always better to be drinking with the saints.
Than without them.
Yeah. Cheers.
Peace.